Laura Mays, Shop Hero. I am moved by the number of woodworking heroes I have met who have been dissatisfied with the direction of their life's path and randomly come upon woodworking by simply meeting one key piece of furniture, seeing the right craftsperson speak, or in the case of this heavyweight, wandering into the right building whilst on a ramble. Laura Mays grew up in Dublin, Ireland, and after high school stayed in Dublin to study architecture for 5 years, citing it as a great design education, but something wasn't clicking. I worked in architecture offices in the summers, and I disliked the carpeted hush, the murmuring into phones, the high-pitched whine and clicks of photocopiers, so far from the dirt and tangible realities of buildings getting made. So she set off on a bit of a vision quest to Japan. This is all feeling very Nakashima to me, frustrated architect in search of a resolution to his or her yearning for good design, toddles off to Japan. She rolled back across Asia and Europe by rail and ended up on a bicycle in the small Irish town of Letterfrack in the northwest part of Connemara, County Galway. It was here in this crossroads town, the four corners housed pub, decommissioned Catholic boys' reformatory, that young Laura Mays wandered into the old Victorian reformatory, now a woodworking school, and casually took in the exhibit of their summer's impressive work. Her journey was not over yet, though, far from it. She tried out New York City for a time as a graphic designer, but again, something wasn't clicking. Then, on the spur of the moment, she remembered the woodworking school in Letterfrack. She looked it up, discovered the deadline to apply was in 3 days, and sent off her completed application by midnight via FedEx. She was accepted into the 2-year program, and her subsequent introduction to making furniture thrilled her to the core, as she had finally discovered the medium in which she could envision a structural design and then see it built to completion. The intervening years saw her studying and teaching woodworking and architecture in Ireland, working at a 6-month internship at a cabinet shop in England, then setting up shop for herself, making furniture commissions for the folks in County Wicklow, Ireland. While Laura certainly profited from all this rich real-life experience, she still hungered for more training and continued to read every woodworking volume she could get her hands on. She said, "I remember distinctly being in Waterstones, a bookshop in Dublin, upstairs in their woodworking department, a half shelf, and pulling out With Wakened Hands, the book of James Krenov and his students' work. I was amazed. I had never seen woodworking as refined, as beautiful. That spurred me to read Krenov's other books. I was struck by his emotional reactions to his work, by his humanity, by his expressions of frailty and failure. This seemed like another whole approach to woodworking, one that encompassed the whole person and all their intellectual and emotional capacities." She immediately applied and was accepted to the program, and suddenly found herself in the redwood trees of Fort Bragg, California, at the College of the Redwoods Fine Furniture Program. Founded by art furniture legend James Krenov, the school held its first session in 1981. Despite a certain social awkwardness, Krenov was a wonderfully elfin woodworker who loved wood and honest design above all else. His 4 popular and invaluable books on woodworking extol the virtues of an unplugged woodworking experience. That's not to say he eschewed machines, but he preferred hand-planed surfaces, organic, clean, flowing lines, and little to no finish. As a young man, he worked for a ship's chandler and always found inspiration in the fair lines of boats. He said, "There's hardly a straight line on them, but there's harmony. People think right angles produce harmony, but they don't. They produce sleep." Thanks to yearly showcases of the school's work in Fine Woodworking magazine, I have been an ardent fan of the school since I began my own self-education. Each unique creation has its own personality, seemingly imbued as if by magic with a personal whimsy, superior in charisma to the most painstakingly executed but less original museum reproductions. I became less astonished by this wizardry once I saw Krenov's written introduction to new students, which included this: "We hope that in viewing what we are offering here, you will pay attention to the details, notice the results, and come to realize that if one cares enough, if one pays enough attention to the richness of wood, to the tools, to the marvel of one's own hands and eye, all these things come together so that a person's work becomes that person's message." In its 35 years of existence to date, the school has attracted luminaries from around the globe and produced students who have gone on to win awards galore, astonish the world with their talents, and also become teachers at other very high-end programs. Teachers like Laura Mays, who attended the school in 2002 and 2003, straddling the somewhat acrimonious retirement of the school's founder. Krenov passed away in 2009 and was sadly given to bitterness in his final years. There is a much deeper story here, but his rancor seems understandable insofar as his whole philosophy was founded in humility, that the craftsperson should remain an amateur rather than aspire to competitive professional efforts. This allows one's work to retain a sense of play and enjoyment, and therefore inspiration. He became hard put upon to inhabit this mindset when he was treated more and more as a guru, increasingly called upon to bestow benedictory blessings on groups of strangers and would-be disciples. The school offers a 9-month program as well as a 3-week summer intensive, both durations that I have frequently drooled over. Interestingly enough, I had spent some time in Fort Bragg over the years, as it was the retirement relocation of choice for my teacher, sensei, and theater mentor, Shozo Sato. My favorite thing about Fort Bragg and its sister to the south, Mendocino, is not the gorgeous coastline or the enchanted stands of Redwood Forest. It's the remoteness. Only a few hours north of San Francisco, often enveloped in mist off the ocean, it somehow feels like a place out of time, which was never more true than when I walked into the bench room of the school for the first time in the spring of 2016. David Welter, who I believe showed up at the school in 1982, is one of those quiet and gentle souls who you quickly realize is holding the whole place together. He and his hail fellow instructor, well met, Eiler Hjort Vest, a Danish boat builder in trademark bright blue overalls and large beard, my soulmate, welcomed me warmly, and I had the privilege of chatting with the 23 students finishing up their 9-month course. I have to say, the vibe was incredibly mellow and positive, despite the nearness of their final grading. I found the quality of the work to be terrifically impressive and inspired, and I was delighted by one innovative detail after the next. It did occur to me, however, that it might be hard to make furniture this superb and also make a profitable living in the real world. To this, Laura replied, "We don't focus on that. There is enough, in a craft sense, to be learning in 9 months, more than enough. So we don't have any formal teaching on running a business or making a living. I think it's valuable for students to make something really well, perhaps finer than they will ever make again. That gives them a bedrock of confidence and a touchstone of quality that stand them in good stead no matter what they go on to do." This answer pleased me greatly. It reminded me of Laura Zahn's statement that woodworkers don't go to the College of the Redwoods like they would any normal school. It has more the feel of a monastery where one can ascend to a higher plane. No pun intended. Speaking of higher planes, I was supremely charmed by the program's Friday night ritual of gathering around a bonfire for the elephants, referring to the elephant on the label of Carlsberg beer, the suds of choice for the founders of the school. Much mirth ensues and general socializing, which I thought sounded awfully familiar. Laura, ever the responsible educator, made sure to point out that the elephants takes place by stepping over the college property line, which in this case is conveniently close to the program's building, so that alcohol is not consumed on college property. In a charming turn, elephants have become the symbol of the woodworking program. I saw them everywhere on my visit, especially on really hip printed garments that the students were wearing. I was disappointed to learn that they were one of a kind and not available for this guy to purchase. A couple of graduates even have elephant tattoos. These people are committed, and by crikey, I salute them. They, in turn, were more than ready to doff their caps in honor of their current leader, Laura Mays. The students cited Laura's teaching style and its delivery as being one of the most valuable things about the program. They find her playful, still maintaining the demeanor of a student herself, just drifting among them as they work, suggesting subtle nuggets like stay sharp, meaning keep your tools sharp, especially near the end when your momentum entices you to press on in dullness. My own suggestion that I subtitle this book Subtle Nuggets was met with a reaction that I can only describe as mixed. Laura can reputedly examine a student's planned labor, as in, I'm going to do 7 dovetails on each corner of this case, and call out with incredible accuracy the amount of time it will take the student to achieve this task. After speaking with Laura, it occurred to me what an ideal setup she has as a woodworker. She still makes her own pieces on the weekends and in the summers, plus at least 20 minutes a day, even if it's just looking at her tools. But then she oversees this cultivated woodworking laboratory where 20-odd woodcraft scientists work together and separately to discover their ideal expressions in wood, time after time. I expressed my envy of this idyllic situation, and she told me that she would go mad without it, without keeping her own work in the center of her life. I had spoken of my work in entertainment as my waitressing gig, and she said that's what teaching is for her, an income that allows her to keep making her own superb pieces. The lucky thing is that she's also teaching what she loves to do as well, which makes for a pretty happy work week. She said, sometimes I feel enormous gratitude for my job at the school. There's a joke that everyone wants to come back for a third year, and I feel like I got that third year, and fourth and fifth. This conversational tack reminded me of some of the other dreamy shop visits I've undertaken for this book, and Laura and I agreed on a notion. The market is shifting in a way, and has been for many years, that is not good for handcrafted works, but the market is increasingly fruitful for the burgeoning number of citizens eager to learn how to make things by hand. So, gentle listener, perhaps that's how you get to have your cake and eat it too in this case. First, find yourself the best possible education in woodworking. Then set up a facility where you are teaching a community of the curious about the two sides of a chisel. Laura said, the school definitely keeps the Krenov tradition alive. It's in the DNA of the place, and I respect that and want to preserve it. But both in the school and in my work, I don't want to get stuck. I try to be reinterpreting, abstracting principles, reforming them in new ways, whether that is Krenov's legacy or an old chair archetype. For me, I'm not certain where my own career is headed in the field of waitressing, but if time will permit me, I certainly hope to stop by the Redwoods again, if only to see the elephants.